This hour of the Jason Rant Show is brought to you by American Crawl Space and Pest Services. Lots of news happening all around the world. And right here at home, it's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So over the weekend, there was a protest outside of the SeaTac Federal Detention Center where almost 200 people are being held as they seek political asylum. And a lot of folks are complaining that the mothers there, many of whom have kids, have been separated from those kids, not understanding that that's what the law requires. The law actually requires that if you're coming into this country and you've got a minor with you, whether you're seeking political asylum or not, there is a separation for a number of reasons, including, by the way, we don't know if you're actually that kid's mother or father. And so the who's who of progressive politicians showed up to this protest to speak to a rally. One of them is Attorney General Bob Ferguson. And he, of course, is thinking about suing the Trump administration.
We are examining whether or not we think we as the state can bring a lawsuit challenging this policy.
They cannot. I mean, they can, but it's not going to go anywhere because they understand that the law is very clear on this, which is why when Cairo 7's Essex Porter asked him whether or not they're going to take legal action, he's listen to the tone of his voice. Listen to the words he uses here.
What I can say is my team understands that I take this very seriously, that I'm intensely unhappy with this policy, but it's a different question of whether or not it's illegal.
Okay, well then, that's a somewhat different answer than you gave to the rally. We're looking into this, we're going to sue if we can. And then it turns into a big virtue signal. I mean, you want to know what a virtue signal is? This is a virtue signal.
What I can say is my team understands that I take this very seriously, that I'm intensely unhappy with this policy, but it's a different question of whether or not it's illegal.
I'm unhappy, I hate it, can't do anything about it because it's legal. Well, then why are you unhappy and hate it? And why do you blame specifically the president? Why not go after the Congress who put in place the law that requires us to separate the families? We can't put a kid in prison with the parent. We have to separate them out. And we certainly aren't going to take a position, unless we're like crazy people like a Bob Ferguson or a Governor Jay Inslee, that if you just come to this country illegally and you seek political asylum, oh, we'll just let you go free and hope you show up to the court date where we can go over the veracity of your claims. That's not how it works. So what exactly then makes this instance of immigration enforcement any different?
What is new and absolutely unusual is that the government has continued to separate them from their children after the criminal process.
Oh. That's not true. That is not true. They do not continue. In the cases in which that does happen, there is a reason, including, by the way, not being able to verify whether or not the mother or father is truly the mother or the father. We have to stop this nonsense. We have to stop falling for this nonsense. And that's what this is. This is not true. These are people who their first instinct is to go up against the president. They think that that's a good brand for them. And maybe it is a good brand in Washington State. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I do know at some point there is fatigue, right? There's like anti-Trump fatigue. I get you don't like President Trump, but maybe Bob Ferguson or Dow Constantine or Jay Inslee or Pramila Jayapal, all these politicians who showed up, maybe you can focus on bettering the state of Washington rather than at any instance that you can just go up against the president. Because there's a lot of problems in the state of Washington that need addressing. There are a lot of problems, whether we're talking about Everett or Shoreline or Bellevue or Redmond or Olympia or Seattle, that can use some of your attention. In fact, one of those things that needs your attention is the focus of our next story as we find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So Magnolia Bridge is worn out. We are years away from it completely crumbling and falling down. So let's continue to drive over it and completely ignore it. That seems like the plan. That's a safe plan. Thanks, Seattle. The Seattle Department of Transportation, which spends tens of millions of dollars on bike lanes that no one will ever use. Seattle Department of Transportation, which recently got $100 million from the Move Seattle levy, they say they don't have enough money to fix the crumbling Magnolia Bridge. The, oh, it's deficient. It's going to fall. In fact, they admit it's going to fall at some point. They studied it. They studied this over a decade ago. And they said, okay, we've got all these options. The best option for this particular bridge in the condition that it's in, condition that was weakened by the Nisqually earthquake, is a full rebuild. We need to do a full rebuild of this entire bridge. That's the best thing. Except they don't have the money to do it. Right now in 2018, if they were to rebuild this bridge, they give a budget of about $400 million, which means probably $1 billion. But let's just go with their budget, $400 million. Had they actually done this project a decade ago when it was recommended, it would have cost them $262 million. So now they're saying they don't have enough money, which means at some point they're going to have to rebuild this bridge. At some point it's going to have, which means it's not going to be $400 million anymore, which they say they don't have. It'll be $800 million, which, of course, if you don't have $400 million, they're not going to have $800 million. So they're just pushing the can down the road. So what are they doing now? Smaller plans to mitigate part of the issue, to get people moving. You know what part of those plans include? Wait for it. Wait for it. Bike lanes. Bike lanes. And at the community hearing they just had, that Q13 was at, people were all like, they're not telling us anything about, like, we don't trust you.
Don't tell me you maintain the roads, because you sure as hell aren't going to rebuild the bridge, and we're covered in potholes. So why? Why should Magnolia citizens continue to pay taxes and engage civilly in Seattle when it does nothing for us?
And there's no legitimate answer to that. Because we complain all the time that services aren't being provided, that potholes aren't being filled, that roads aren't being built correctly, bridges aren't being maintained. You're taking away lanes for bike lanes that literally no one is using. Not literally, 7 people use it. My apologies. Bike commuting as a percentage of the population growth is going down. People are not commuting to work via bicycle. And you're putting all the money there, but on something as important as fixing a bridge that will last until 2024. 2024 is the date that they put on before the bridge is so bad that they wouldn't allow anyone to drive on it. Unless, by the way, an earthquake hits. If an earthquake hits tomorrow, this thing is going to crumble. That's what it seems like they're saying. You trust them to fix this issue? They're not going to fix. They're ignoring you. Kip Liu is a member of the Seattle Department of Transportation. He was at this community meeting. It happened on May 21st. We just found this audio. No one there takes him seriously because what he says is basically a big joke.
The bridge is safe and it'll continue to remain safe until we basically deem it unsafe and we'll basically put no predictions.
What does that mean?
He started talking before he formulated his thought.
I don't know what that... So the bridge is safe until we say it's not safe. Oh, thanks, ma'am. Gee.
Okay.
I mean, it's raining outside until the sun is out and it's not raining anymore. This is a radio show until it becomes a TV show. Thank you for stating some basic points that really don't mean anything, don't cause us any reason to believe that you're taking us seriously. Thanks, man. Let's do another bike lane. Let's have another bike lane. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Stuck in traffic.
Stuck in traffic. People are stuck in traffic on a regular basis. Stuck in traffic going to a whole bunch of these meetings we're just talking about. Meetings that make absolutely no sense. Meetings that we show up to, stuck in traffic to get at a 6 o'clock start date, that end up getting us really angry. I was angry at a community meeting about 2 weeks ago for the tiny home village in South Lake Union. And I met a lot of you people there. Thank you so much for showing up. I needed to show up to one more meeting. And the people who skipped out on the first meeting, I need you to show up to the second meeting. Because I am sick and tired of the city of Seattle deciding that they're going to put a low barrier encampment in a densely populated neighborhood. I'm sick and tired of a city that ignores women who stand up and say, I have been sexually assaulted. I do not want to live next to a low barrier encampment. And have her voice and all of our voices completely be ignored. There is going to be the second, it's the final meeting, to talk about the tiny village low barrier encampment in the South Lake Union neighborhood that they were moving forward with and are still moving forward with despite the fact despite the fact that virtually no one in the neighborhood actually wants it. They're having another meeting to ignore all of us. And so I think we should make this meeting even bigger than the first one, because there will be cameras there. There will be reporters there. And I want to make sure on record, we are seen as coming out as a unit, as a community, saying, no, we do not trust your plans. We do not trust your departments to actually implement your plans. And we know that what you're doing is bad for our neighborhoods, and we're not going to sit back and allow you to just do it. We're going to put up some resistance, even if at the end of the day, the resistance doesn't do anything. We are going to start to take back our city. So what I would love for you to do is text the keyword homeless to 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword homeless. I'm going to give you the details on this next event. It's going to take place on Thursday, June 28th. From 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. It's in the exact same place as the last one. So it's in Seattle. It's on Westlake, 415 Westlake. Text the keyword homeless to 1-800-465-8770 so you can put this on your calendar. We're going to be talking about this later on in the week and next week once we get a little bit closer to the event. But I want you to put it down there. Come say hi to me. Let's take some selfies. Let's do some fist bumps. This time I'll try to remember to bring the donuts because I forgot last time. My apologies. But let's actually speak up and tell them, no, we're not okay with this. Keyword homeless to 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Hello. Really do appreciate you tuning in. G7 summit happened over the weekend, or a conversation happened over the weekend with some world leaders, our allies, and it erupted into a war of words between the United States and Canada. Because the G7 summit was supposed to put out a statement that all of these leaders agree to, basically about the principles that they'd use on trade deals moving forward. But at the end of the press conference about that statement that was about to be released, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said they won't be pushed around by the United States. He called out the steel and aluminum tariff as unjust. Kind of had a Love Actually moment. Remember, the prime minister in the UK spoke up against the US president? Well, now it's happening in Canada.
Right. Billy Bob, right?
Yeah. Except now it's Billy Justin. Billy Bob Trudeau. Except the problem was he made these statements when Trump was already gone on his way to North Korea, where he is right now in this meeting, in Singapore with the North Korean leader to talk with Kim Jong-un. And so the way that this press conference was taken as a stunt meant to weaken the United States as we get on the international stage. Folks weren't happy. Economic advisor Larry Kudlow was not happy. He was on CNN to say this.
He did a great disservice to the whole G7. He betrayed.
Trudeau did.
Yes, he did, because they were united in the G7. They came together. And I was there extensively. I was involved in these late night negotiations. President Trump was charming. And so they had this bilateral meeting. We were very close to making a deal with Canada on NAFTA, bilaterally perhaps. And then we leave and Trudeau pulls this sophomoric political stunt for domestic consumption.
Oh, and then it gets even worse. The White House trade advisor Peter Navarro said this of Trudeau.
Chris, there's a special place in hell for any foreign leader that engages in bad faith diplomacy with President Donald J. Trump and then tries to stab him in the back on the way out the door.
Burn. The left was not happy with that language, not here nor in Canada, which is kind of funny because they cheered on Madeleine Albright.
Hillary Clinton will always be there for you. And just remember, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other.
Yeah, except for when the Trump team does it, it's like, boo, how dare you? The Canadian Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland spoke with reporters about the rhetoric of Donald Trump, and she said, no, we're going to fight these tariffs because these tariffs are bad for Canadians.
Let me be extremely clear to Canadians, and let me say, as the Prime Minister and I said on the day that the U.S. announced its illegal and unjustified imposition of tariffs against our steel and aluminum industries.
It's not illegal, and you calling it unjust is fine. And I understand why the country that has to pay the tariffs finds something to be unjust. But just real quick, if they're unjust and illegal, why is there a 270% tariff on dairy or 70% on sausage or 57% on barley seed? I'm just kind of curious because you have tariffs on us. We can't, and that hurts farmers, particularly your tariff on dairy products, hurts U.S. farmers. And so you instituted your tariffs because you wanted to protect your own farmers. Fine. Then isn't the argument the president wants to help companies in this country on aluminum and steel and don't want to give jobs away to Canada? That's not okay. Okay, God. I want to be on the same page with them that it's okay when they do it, but when we do it, it's illegal and unjust. Cool. Got it. Thank you so much. It's the Jason Rance Show. Scary road rage in Kirkland and an inspiring job fair for teens in White Center. It's time for the big local brought to you by Tulalip Resort Casino.
Kent, Olympia, Everett, Sammamish.
This is the big local on the Jason Rance Show.
Sumner, Woodinville, Des Moines.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
So look, we know this. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. So hyper-focused, they end up ignoring all the important and interesting, and yes, sometimes quirky stories that happen all across Washington State. So weekday mornings, 7:30, right here on the Jason Rance Show. Thanks to our friends over at Tulalip Resort Casino, we do something called the Big Local, where we focus on you, the communities you live in, and we ignore the city of Seattle. And this morning, we start in Kirkland, where Cairo 7 reports a teen is now facing assault and drive-by shooting charges after, according to the police, he flashed a machete and then returned to the scene of the incident with an AK-47 and started shooting up a car. So it happened in Kirkland where Nick Frosto was driving his pickup truck. He ends up getting cut off by a teenage driver. His name is Alexander Anderson, 19 years old. And so when he was cut off, what is sometimes we do? There's a number of things. Sometimes we yell internally. We say in our head, oh, that's... But sometimes we flip someone off. That's an unaggressive behavior. Sometimes we speed up and get really close. Sometimes we do something like the horn. We give them a little honk of the horn, which is what Nick Frosto did. Just no middle finger, no cussing, although maybe internally he was thinking it. Just, you know, a honk of a horn to say what you just did was wrong. And I'm sure that showed Alexander, taught him a lesson. Only it didn't, because after he honks at this kid, he very reasonably responded by rolling down his window and pulling out a machete and slapping that machete against the side of his own car, sort of in a threatening posture. Because I don't know of anyone who can actually even hold on to a machete and not look like they are threatening you.
He must have just had it on his front seat.
He was just hanging out. Oh, you should see what I did to the dude back there who honked at me for cutting him off. Just tapping it on the side. And so Frosto does what he should, which is call 911 immediately, because you've got some crazy dude in front of you with a machete and you don't know what the hell this guy's going to do. So he calls 911. But as he's calling 911, this kid gets out of his car and starts to run at him. Luckily, Nick Frosto has a concealed carry permit. He's got a gun on him.
He immediately got out, started charging me with this machete while I'm on the operator, 911 operator. So I told the operator, I'm going to fire a warning shot. The kid ran back to his car.
He ran back to his car, got in his car and went somewhere else. And so Nick is just hanging out waiting for the cops to show up, because that's a scary position to be in. And you just fired your weapon one or two times. You have to wait for the cops to get there so they can file a police report. Only before the cops got back, the kid got back with an AK-47.
I started firing and I saw shots. I started firing, backing up, pulled out back on Holmes Point, went down towards the park and hid in some luxury homes down the water and hidden behind the garage.
So he hides. The kid runs away. Cops finally get there. They exchange information. They find out who this kid is. Oh, no, they didn't. They didn't find out who the kid is. The kid's mom found out what her son did, and according to Cairo 7, citing the court documents, he was delivered back to the scene by his mother. The mom turned him in! That mom knows this kid was up to no good before this. Right? I mean, it's weird because I give kudos to the mom and say, this is a good mother, right? She found out her kid did something horrible, and so she turned him in. But couldn't you argue bad parenting is a big reason why this kid felt like he could get away with firing an AK-47 and brandishing a machete against someone who honked at him?
Or is attributed to his ownership of an AK-47?
So, but, right, don't you kind of blame the mom here? And again, I don't know all the details of this kid's family life. For all I know, he is an adopted kid who she brought into her family trying to help him from himself, and she just got a hold of him last week and then found out. Like, I don't know any of the details, but kudos to the mom. But also, you're going to lose some points once you figure out how this kid got a hold of the AK-47 and the machete and what's going on in his life that he feels that he can actually do this. Now, apparently, he doesn't have a criminal background. He doesn't, which I'm a little shocked at, or I'm angry that we haven't caught him for things he's probably done in the past. Because
yeah, he went from 0 to 60
right,
really fast.
60? Oh, what are you talking about? This exceeds the speed limit. And then some. Police later found additional firearms and accessories in his bedroom. He's been held on bond. I think it's like $350,000. This is crazy. Now, a lot of people will point out that part of the reason why this kind of stuff happens is this is a 19-year-old who doesn't have any additional responsibilities. That's the assumption. In fact, we know that around this time of year into the summer, we see more crimes, we see more drive-bys, we see more shootings, we see more auto thefts being committed by teenagers. And the reason is simple, at least the explanation is simple. They say summer comes, kids are out of school, these bad elements don't have jobs, so they're not being forced to go to school every single day by their parents, they're just kind of hanging out, they're doing nothing, and that gets them into trouble. And if you don't have a job, it means you've got all of this free time on your hands and no responsibilities, and then you turn to crime. And while I think that that is a little simplistic in its reason behind the crimes, I concede that obviously the data points suggest that in summer this type of crime goes up, and at the exact same time, the kids who are committing these criminal acts don't have jobs and they're not in school. And so this is why we see a whole bunch of job fairs coming up. In fact, in White Center, they had a job fair on Friday after the show called Peace in the Hood. This is the second time that they've done this, and it's for exactly that, to bring peace to their neighborhood. Because at this time, you've got a lot of those bad elements. And so you got 30 employers who met with over 200 kids at this thing, and that's awesome. Q13 reports it was organized by King County Youth Violence Prevention Coordinator Justin Cox.
A lot of times we expect them to change their course of action without giving them anything better to do.
And he says all of these kids are incredibly impressionable, and they need to be pulled into the right direction.
Growing up in the area, you're going to have a lot of pulls, whether it be gangs, whether it be drugs, whatever it is. Every kid wants to feel like they belong to something. And when you give them a job, you give them a title. Every day they wake up, they have that title, and they know that, okay, this is what I have to do.
And look, I buy that to a point. There's a point where I no longer buy that, where I don't necessarily think, in the case of like this 19-year-old Anthony in Kirkland, do I think he was a job away? Like, oh, the only thing that stood in his way of brandishing that machete and firing that AK-47 was a job driving for Uber? Like, no, I don't particularly believe that. But I do think that you've got enough kids on the fence or at the fork in the road. They can either go to the left and turn to potential crime or get involved with bad elements, or they can turn to the right, which is to get them on that right path of getting a job, taking on responsibilities, getting a better education. And that's really who we're going after. We're not necessarily going after the kids who are already committing the crimes, although we'd certainly like to help those folks. We're talking about the kids who, because of their economic situation, they feel like they might be in a position where there's no hope. And when there's no hope, that's when you turn to the bad elements that get you involved in these kinds of crimes. And so if all of a sudden you bring them to a convention here, and you've got a lot of people in this room who are there saying, we want to help you, We want to be on your side. We want to give you the tools that you need to survive on your own, make a good living, have some dignity in what it is you're doing. I think that that can help the kid who's on the fence, the kid who's trying to figure out which path they're going to go down. And so kudos to Justin Cox. Kudos to the second annual Peace in the Hood. Here's an 18-year-old. His name is John. He's been working for the last three summers because of programs like this.
I wanted money, honestly. And then it's also like good opportunities to like get your communication skills up and stuff. So I wanted to take advantage of that. I'm going to Washington State University. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs. Kudos to him. Good for him. I love these types of programs, particularly when we're talking about this demographic. Specifically when we're talking about people who are on the precipice of maybe turning to a life of crime. So, and I don't know about John. I'm sure John didn't want to do that. He just wanted some money, like he said. But now he's staying on the right path. So good for them. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Don't forget, it's very important that you subscribe to the podcast of this show and the Todd Herman Show. It's how we get conservative voices out there and represented on iTunes, because iTunes will highlight shows that get a surge in subscribers. And so if you want to help, all you have to do is subscribe by texting the keyword podcast to the number 1-800-465-8770. It's a number better tax resolution hotline. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. We'll go ahead and send you a link so you can subscribe to my show podcast, as well as the Todd Herman Show podcast. Now, this next story should not come as a surprise to anybody. It should not shock anyone. But as we all collectively earn more money in this region, particularly King County, where Crosscut was focused with their attention, your pay is going up. Economy is doing better. The GOP tax plan, tax cut, has given you higher take-home pay. As your dollars are going up, single moms are getting poorer. You're getting richer. Single moms are getting poorer. David Croman over at Crosscut finds that incomes for single mother-led households are either flat or falling. Now, that makes sense to me. And it should, in theory, make sense to you, right? If you're a single mom or a single dad, doesn't really matter. You're focusing a huge chunk of your life on the kid or kids that you're taking care of. And that obviously takes time. It takes energy. It takes money. You're spending a lot of money on them. It's easier to balance when you've got a husband or a wife or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or just some other person in your life, because here's the deal. You have a job. If you need to stay late for work, you're going to have to say no if you're a single parent, because you got to take care of your kid. Now, if all of a sudden you've got a spouse or some other person to help take care of your kid, you can let them do that for that one day where you're staying late, working, getting paid more, learning more skills that then come in hand when there's the potential for getting a promotion. All the things matters. And when you don't have that other person, you end up struggling. Which is why I always find it weird that we've been trending towards treating single parents as if there aren't any meaningful struggles. We have this weirdness of trying to quote-unquote normalize, and I know I'm slightly misusing that term in this sense, but we try to normalize single parents because we want to get rid of the stigma associated with it, which is fine to me. We should not stigmatize people who are single parents, because many of them are single parents because they got into a bad relationship with someone who was toxic, who was potentially dangerous to them, and they've decided to try to better themselves without that person. We should not have a stigma associated with that. But let's also not pretend that single mothers and single fathers don't have some really significant struggles ahead of them. Let's not romanticize it. We were told to stop stigmatizing sort of single parenthood, when in a lot of cases, the so-called stigmatizing was simply pointing out that you're at a huge disadvantage when you're in that position. Your kid is at a huge disadvantage when they're in that position, whether or not it's by choice or by circumstance. So let's focus on the things that we can focus on. I don't want to focus on the circumstance, because I think that we need to offer up some tailor-made solutions to people who are struggling who were put in a position where they needed to leave their husband or wife, boyfriend or girlfriend. Let's talk about the choices that we can make, because we can certainly make better choices, like not having kids when we're not ready. I know, I think we're not supposed to say that, right? I think like progressives get upset when we say, maybe you should consider not having a child when you're not ready to have a child. If you're not ready to live with the consequences of getting pregnant or getting someone else pregnant, how about this? Don't put yourself in a position where you're getting pregnant or getting someone else pregnant. That's not a shocking position to take. And yet progressives don't want us to have that conversation because you're judging. Because you're judging. Sometimes you need to judge. Because most of the stories that we hear about or the circumstances that we talk about, a lot of that is in fact driven by choice, not circumstances. So when we have control, we should act a little bit smarter. And that also means the people who are out there, who are parents, that's also on you. Don't expect your 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old kid, hell, don't expect your 25-year-old kid to make really smart life decisions time after time after time. Do you not remember when you were that age? You were a dope. Most people under the age of 25, because we don't have any life experiences at that point, most of us are dopes. We make stupid decisions. We act irrationally. We act unreasonably. And sometimes we end up putting ourselves in positions that we have to pay for down the line. And so that means the parents out there, you got to step up, man. You got to make sure that you are the responsible adult in these people's lives so they're not going down the wrong path. Make better choices. And that's really a theme, I think, of the show. Because we often talk about people who complain about the cost of living in Seattle. It's too expensive to live in this studio apartment in Capitol Hill. It's unbelievable. $2,000. How dare you? I can't afford that. Then don't live there. But I wanna. Well, you don't get what you want. You're choosing to live in an apartment you can't afford. Do not tell me that you are upset with how little discretionary income you have at the end of the month. That's on you. You've made that choice. Make smarter choices. That's a choice that you're making. That's not a circumstance that you're in. There's no one in a circumstance where they're forced to live in a $2,000 studio apartment on Capitol Hill. If you're that person, you can send me a text. Try to make the claim. Try to make the claim that you are stuck in that position. You have no choice but to do that. Come on. Make better choices. Darren, you wanted to jump in. I'll give you 10 seconds. You were giving me a judgy look.
And the cost of childcare is also like $3,000 a month. So that's like basically a salary in itself. It just cancels out whatever work you'd be doing.
So let's focus on choices when we can and help people whose choices were not their own. I do think we can't just lump everyone in to one group. I don't think you're helping anyone. You're hurting everyone. The Jason Rancho, 1-800-465-8770 for your text message.